The following audio file was recorded on April 8th in Nashville, Tennessee by Earnhardt Productions Incorporated at a voting rights and election reform conference titled Gathering to Save Our Democracy. It has been uploaded to this site courtesy of the January 30th Coalition, an Ohio-based voting rights group which endorsed the conference. You are welcome to copy and distribute or broadcast this recording. Please also consider making a donation to Radio for All so that recordings like this one can continue to be made available.
We are all honored to have heard from three veterans of a movement that we are simply the next phase of here tonight. And with that in mind, we're going to spend the next couple of hours hearing from a number of patriotic warriors. And there's no better group of patriotic warriors to hear from first than the front lines that all Americans are aware of in the 2004 election, the state of Ohio. So I'd like to invite our Ohio panelists to come on up to the stage now. We've gotten a very interesting mix of people who can all speak from their perspective on what did occur in Ohio and what still is unresolved in Ohio. And that's a final counting of the votes there. We are very pleased to have this group with us, and who are we missing? Anyone? No, there we go. Okay. Again, rather than me taking time to repeat everyone's bio sketch, you do have a paragraph on all of the speakers here at the conference. I have asked Cliff Arnebeck to be sort of the ramrod for this group, and he will both open and close with comments. We are very fortunate to have Mr. Arnebeck, Richard Reinhold, R.H. Phillips, Joanne Roush, I should know that, and Bernie Windham. Here to speak. They're coming to you from a variety of perspectives, from the position of an attorney who actually put a case forward or supported a case to challenge the Ohio votes, to researchers who have looked at what happened in Ohio, to citizen activists who worked both up to the election and following the election to make some sense of Ohio. After we hear from this Ohio panel, we'll hear from probably a half a dozen other states, because while America may be vaguely aware that there were some problems in Ohio, and probably a large number of Americans on January 6th became aware that the problems in Ohio were serious enough to have something happened in Congress for the first time in 150 years, if ever, and that's challenging those votes. Very few Americans are aware that Ohio is truly just the tip of the iceberg, and so you're going to hear from Florida, you're going to hear from Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Arizona, a number of other states, all of whom have similar stories to tell. Very few of those stories have seen the light of day at all. So, we are about to spend the next couple of hours in the presence of patriotic warriors, and there's no better person to start that dialogue than with Cliff Arnebeck.
Thanks very much, Bernie. You've done a wonderful job organizing this conference, and we all appreciate it. Appreciate Reverend Thomas for permitting us the use of this fine facility. I want to acknowledge some people who aren't here who would like to be. Bob Fotrakis was originally supposed to be part of this panel. He will be joining us later this evening to summarize sort of an overview of what's going on currently in Ohio. John Boniface, whom some of you may know, as the general counsel for the National Voting Rights Institute, John represented the Green Party and Libertarian Party that filed the recount in Ohio. And John would very much like to be here with us tonight and this weekend, but he had a conflicting commitment in California. I want to give a quick overview, and then it's really about investigation, and then call on the other folks on the panel to give their piece, their perspective for a piece of this investigation process. First, the overview. Well, first, let me tell you who I am. I am involved with a group called the Alliance for Democracy, which was founded by a journalist, Ronnie Duggar, back in 1996. Ronnie had written an article in 1988 on the vulnerability of our election system to manipulation through electronic voting. So this was an issue that he was on top of way back then, and has continued to be interested in, and predicted in The Nation magazine in an article preceding this last election that there would be an effort to steal the election. My involvement in this investigation process began with a memo that Ronnie wrote the day after this 2004 election, in which he indicated where he thought the election had been stolen, or at least that investigation of that should be made. I'm also associated with a group called Common Cause, which has been a leading organization in this country in terms of fighting for good government on an ongoing basis, particularly at the federal level, but also organizing at the state level. I was privileged, and I'm sure Bob will echo my remarks on this, as Bob and I were preparing with other counsel and other citizens to launch litigation over this Ohio election, we were contacted by Reverend Jesse Jackson. And Reverend Jackson said, when people are standing up to fight for our civil rights, we will stand with them. And it reminded me of the incident in the 2000 election, when it was the Black Congressional Caucus that stood in Congress and tried to challenge what was, in fact, a fraudulent election. And that challenge did not proceed to any kind of discussion for lack of a single senatorial supporter. So we felt privileged for Reverend Jackson to join us, and we felt deeply honored and privileged to have had Barbara Boxer provide the one senatorial support needed to support Stephanie Tubbs Jones. Believe it or not, there's another kind of litigation in Ohio other than that which John Bonifaz on behalf of the Green Party and Libertarian Party and we on behalf of citizens in the state of Ohio brought. It's a suit by two individuals in a rural Ohio county, Wood County, alleging that ACT, ACORN, NAACP Voter Fund, and the AFL-CIO conspired to use criminal methods to register voters in the state of Ohio, and thereby diluting the effectiveness of the plaintiff's votes. This action was brought under what's known as the Ohio Corrupt Activities Act. It's the state counterpart to the Racketeering Influenced and Corrupt Organization statute at the federal level. That case is proceeding, and I represent, and proud to represent, the NAACP Voter Fund in that litigation. Now, let me turn to a quick overview, and then to the various people on the panel here who will give you a deeper insight into one part or another of the investigatory process. First, I'd like to talk about what I understand to have been the Karl Rove strategy to win the election in the face of a substantial shortage of popular support. Three parts. Take all necessary steps to win the reported votes in Florida and Ohio so as to deliver their electoral votes. Because Florida had been done before, Ohio was the top priority for the innovative work in this part of the strategy. Second part of the strategy. Take the steps necessary to produce a reported popular vote nationally so as to report a significant margin for President George Bush. Third part of the strategy. Schedule the invasion of Fallujah and the election for a parliament in Iraq so that for Kerry to challenge the election outcome, he would be in the position of challenging the integrity of the President of the United States and the Commander-in-Chief on the eve of major battle and major political progress for Iraq. The strategy was successfully implemented. And the implementation of that strategy put the Democratic Party and the mainstream media in a box. The media could cover citizen challenges, but they could not do it on the basis that anything that the citizens were doing was going to affect the outcome in terms of who was going to be president. Because without Kerry, part of the challenge, it was not going to happen. Bob Fetrakis and I had the privilege, through the courtesy of Reverend Jesse Jackson, to be a part of a conversation and participate in a conversation with Senator Kerry on December 12, the day before we filed the lawsuit, the challenge in Ohio. And Reverend Jackson put it very eloquently. He said, "Senator, our challenge is being treated at the margin, and they're going to run out the clock." He said, "If you join the challenge, it will move from the margin into the center." And of course, the senator didn't do that, and we were at the margin. We did, through the courage of Stephanie Tubbs Jones, a former U.S. attorney, a former judge, and a congresswoman, and a courageous woman, it got some national attention. It was a historic event, and it certainly was an improvement over what happened in Congress in 2000. What are the strategic questions now, or question or questions? I see it as one question. Will there be a realistic investigation of the 2004 election? Because at this point, Bernie, the votes in Ohio have not been counted, not even once. They haven't been recounted, and they haven't had anything approximating an audit of the kind that the press conducted in the Florida election. After all the controversy and after the litigation was over, a consortium of news organizations said, "We will implement freedom of information requests, we will retain the accounting firms, and we will take responsibility for a full and honest, auditable, audited recount." As an outgrowth of which, of course, it was determined that Al Gore had indeed gotten more votes than Mr. Bush. What's at stake in this strategic question of do we have a realistic investigation? What's at stake is the rule of law or the rule of spin in this country, in our politics. It's what's at stake is a fact-based correction and reform, or a window dressing, whitewash, cover-up kind of reform. What's at stake is how the wisdom of the American people will be judged by our fellow citizens in the world and by history. As George Soros was saying before the election, this election in 2004, in some sense and to some degree, was a referendum on the presidential doctrine of empire, American empire, through full spectrum dominance, military dominance, and preemptive war when necessary to maintain that empire. Another thing at stake is whether the United States continues to function outside the world community or resumes its place as a more constructive element in the protection and advancement of human civilization. If George Bush won, it would solidify or justify his legitimacy as president. So I've been saying from the beginning, as we engaged in this litigation, or began to launch it, no one had a greater stake. No one has a greater stake in an honest investigation of this election, if Bush won, than George Bush. Because of the success of the Rove strategy, which boxed Senator Kerry in and played upon his patriotism, his honor, the press is not likely to do what they did in 2000 in Florida. So if there's going to be an investigation, it's going to be by litigation. And it's going to require the power of subpoena, as Representative John Conyers has said, an investigation with a power of subpoena where witnesses are called by both sides and subject to cross-examination. What's going to determine whether or not we have that? It's going to involve whether lawyers are intimidated, whether lawyers have the courage to stand up in spite of that intimidation, whether people are corrupted to go through the motions as though they're investigating, but really not doing it. It's not just the lawyers, it's the judges, it's the journalists, it's our academic institutions, and it's our politicians, and there are some courageous ones. I've mentioned a few so far, but I'll mention a Senator, Ray Miller, who's also a minister, an ordained minister, and a black American. Ray Miller is now being prosecuted in the state of Ohio for something which is conduct, is allegedly unethical, which under Ohio law must go through an ethics commission before it can be referred for prosecution. That was bypassed, and it was referred directly to prosecution. Why is Ray Miller being singled out? When Representative John Conyers scheduled a meeting of his minority group within the House Judiciary Committee, scheduled it in Columbus, Ohio. It was first scheduled to occur in the State House. When the powers that be found out the purpose of this meeting, they said this meeting will not occur in the State House. And implicitly, they were trying to intimidate any member of the state legislature to have anything to do with this meeting. Ray Miller is the one state representative or senator who showed up at that meeting and had the courage to actively participate. That's what I'm talking about, intimidation to try to stop the real investigation, the real inquiry. There's also an issue of the degree to which our intelligence and law enforcement agencies will be politicized. Will our law enforcement process be used to intimidate those who are trying to conduct a proper investigation, or will it be used to involve itself and assist in that investigation? And let's keep in mind that what we're talking about appears, based on the evidence, to be the biggest political crime in American political history, on the order of a Watergate on steroids. Another factor will we lose our focus? Will we be distracted? And there are currently an extraordinary number of things going on in Ohio to distract us with what I would call a political and legal shock and awe. Destroy the safety net for the poor. Cut the taxes for the rich. It's an assault on every aspect of things that public interest people care about, civil rights groups care about. It's easy to lose focus and forget, in defending these other things, to forget that we need to investigate this election. Where are we now in Ohio? All the things I've talked about are in play, and we can talk about it further as we move along. But the stubborn facts are these. The reported result differs from the scientific evidence. The scientific evidence consists of exit polls and statistical analysis, as well as the sworn testimony of thousands of citizens in the state of Ohio. And I want to say that all of the evidence, in terms of real evidence, admissible in law, is on one side. That is, on the side of voter suppression in violation of the civil rights laws of this country and in evidence of fraud. What has been offered on the other side is conversation. It's reports, unsworn testimony, not sworn testimony. Now I'd like to move to first the person who knows this from the prior to the election. There's been a great deal of work done by many organizations, and Mr. Reinell will tell us about some of the events in Ohio preceding the election.
Thank you. I feel as though, even though that we haven't met before, that y'all are like kind of extended kin, the family that you hear about but haven't met yet, and finally we're getting together and meeting, and it feels really good. I'm not going to talk about myself, except to say that I was the coordinator for the Northeast Ohio vote recount teams for the Green Libertarian Party, and so I've got some direct knowledge of what went on, the illegalities and fraud that went on in the election recount. When I was talking with Bernie before I arrived, he said that I should be telling about what went on in the, before the election, during the election, such like that, because most people here don't know about what went on in Ohio. And I have to tell you, most people in Ohio don't know what went on in Ohio. And I think for two reasons. One, it wasn't really covered. It wasn't covered by the press. It was ignored. And the second reason is I think people are in the first stage of denial, that they don't want to believe that something as sacred as the right to vote and have the vote counted accurately and honestly was violated by scoundrels. And that's what happened. And I think a lot of the documentation I'm going to be giving you is available because of people in Ohio who have been auditing the election and what went on prior to the election. We have one of those people here who's the head of Ohio Vigilance, and her name is Vicki Lovgren, and I would like you to help me shower some blessings on Vicki. And Vicki, would you please stand? Vicki is a wonderful woman, and I hope you get a chance to talk with her while she's here. And when I'm talking about vote suppression, I want you to keep in mind that I'm talking about suppression in the basically the Democratic communities, the urban areas that are primarily African American and poor people and such, and that. And also something I've noticed, Ohio is the fourth state I've lived in, and it is the most racist state that I've lived in. with open activities by the Ku Klux Klan and such like that. Also, the Secretary of State, Blackwell, who himself is a African-American, was also the co-chair of the Bush-Cheney campaign in Ohio. And anyway, I think that what you'll find as I continue on is that what happened in Florida in 2000 was just kind of like a little warm-up game to what happened in Ohio in 2004. And what I'm going to do in terms of my presentation, I'm basically going to talk about pre-election vote suppression, election day vote suppression, and then I'm going to talk about the election recount, illegalities, and fraud. In terms of pre-election vote suppression, that there was a team of Texans who came up to Columbus, Ohio, and I've been referring to him as the Texas Hit Squad. Basically, what they were doing was identifying, they were in a hotel right across the Republican campaign headquarters, and what they were overheard doing is phoning ex-felons who have the right to vote in Ohio, and they were identifying themselves as FBI agents, and they were telling the ex-felons that if they voted in this election, they would be arrested. Yeah. And why were they doing that? Well, it turns out that no matter what political party a person belongs to prior to their being arrested, 90% will vote Democratic after. So there's the motivation. Also, something went on, and I'm going to give an overview, and I'm going to get down to some specifics, that official appearing letters, very official-looking letters, and door hangers, and even flyers, were out directing voters to the wrong precinct. And the reason why that was important is because up until 2004, that if you went to the wrong precinct, as long as you were in the right county, you could vote with a provisional ballot and have your vote counted. And that changed in 2004 under Secretary of State Blackwell. You had to be at the right precinct. Something else that went on were flyers and letters and such that were basically, and again, very official looking, appearing from the Board of Election, was that because of the overwhelming number of people who had registered to vote, that Republicans would vote on Tuesday, Democrats would vote on Wednesday. So, and there were a lot of people who believed that, amazingly. Also, in terms of election day suppression, there were long lines in the areas, in the urban areas that voted Democratic, up to 7 hours long, with an average of 3 hours. I've done the math, and it looks like approximately 1 out of 3 people who showed up to vote and had to wait in line ended up not voting because they needed to go to work, their kids were getting home, their lunch hour was only an hour, they had to get back to work, et cetera, et cetera. So we lost 1/3 of our urban vote by this election repression activity. In fact, one polling place closed at 7, despite the fact that there was a long line, people had been waiting for hours in the rain. And this is illegal in Ohio, but they did it anyway. Provisional ballots, and there were a great many provisional ballots that were cast, that they were later thrown out because they went to the wrong precinct, despite the fact that the right precinct was in the same room, just at a different table, that they didn't sign in the appropriate place. Now, according to Ohio law, there's actually 4 places where you can sign. All you have to do is sign one of them. But unless you signed in this one particular place, your provisional ballot was thrown out. One of the things we discovered when we were in Lorain County contacting people whose provisional ballots were not counted, that these people were ticked off, to say the least. And in fact, one woman who had worked for a Board of Elections had gone in and cast a provisional ballot, and she asked if it would be counted, and they said it would be. And after the election, she contacted the Board of Election to make certain her vote was counted, and she was told that it was counted. And then one of our people called her and said, guess what, your vote wasn't counted. And these people were basically saying, hey, I don't care who I have to tell, bring on the media, bring on lawyers, I'll tell them. And so a number of affidavits were collected on this. Also, one of the things that occurred was that approximately 200 voting machines were not put out at polling places in Franklin County, which is basically Columbus area. And that was one of the reasons why there were so many long lines, is because these machines were held back. Also, the Franklin County voting machine allocation report shows that voting machines were distributed in a formula that favored Bush over Kerry. An example is in precinct 55B in Columbus's Near East Side, where there were 1,300 registered voters, and according to the Franklin County Board of Election estimates, 956 active voters who had voted in the last two federal elections. And there was voter registration increase of up to 17%. That by the Board of Elections' own guidelines, the polling place required 10 voting machines. They were given 3. So now you can get to see why there were long lines. In precinct 1B, where there were 1,600 registered voters and a 27% increase in voter registration, the precinct had 5 voting machines in 2000, but only 3 in 2004, despite the increase of 27% registration. Well, where did these voting machines go besides being held back? Well, they went out to the conservative white areas, where despite a lack of increase in voter registration, that their voting machines were increased. And in fact, in Oberlin, Ohio, I actually live just outside Oberlin in the township. Oberlin's very progressive. The vote went 80% for Kerry in the election in Oberlin. There were lines 3 to 4 hours long all day. Many people left and didn't vote. In the basically white conservative township that I live in, I didn't have to wait. There was no line. Okay? And that's what was going on. In Cuyahoga County, according to the Secretary of State's website, there were 25,000 provisional ballots, most of them cast in the city of Cleveland, but there were none cast in the surrounding suburbs. There was also an abnormally high vote count for third-party candidates in Cleveland, and that it's in an area that's very progressive, 215 votes went to a very conservative constitutional law candidate that statistically would appear to should have gone to Kerry. And we're not sure why that happened, but it happened. There was also in Cincinnati, there was sworn testimony that there was deliberate destruction of new voter registration cards by a private company hired to process the forms. This was in the news. What they were doing was is they were separating out after they help people register, they would separate out the Republican from the Democrat. And then the Democratic registrations went in the dumpster. And the Republican registrations went to the Board of Election. That was going on. Also in Cuyahoga County, that provisional ballots were rejected if there was no date of birth on the packet. Well, by Ohio law, there doesn't need to be a date of birth on the packet. Yes, this is wonderful. In conservative county, with the polling place in the New Life Church polling site, that there were 4,258 votes for George W. Bush. This was despite the fact there were only 600 and some voters. Yeah. And something very interesting happened in Ohio, and this wasn't illegal, but it was certainly very clever. And that is that on the ballot, there was a change of constitution regarding gay marriage. And this was to make it illegal on the constitution. What this did was this became a cry to get out the conservative vote. And it succeeded. Now, this is despite the fact that gay marriage was already illegal in Ohio. The governor's Republican. The state house is Republican. And 6 of the 7 Supreme Court justices are Republican. So there's no need for that other than a way to motivate conservatives to get out and vote. You know what? I'm kind of running out of time here. I got 3 minutes left, and there's so much to cover. Let me just kind of summarize and say that there were basically about 250,000 votes that weren't counted in Ohio. That doing the statistics on them, that these were primarily votes coming from Democratic areas, and there's a variety of reasons why they weren't counted. And George Bush won by, what, 130,000 votes in Ohio? And there's 250,000 votes not counted, primarily from Democratic areas. There was something like 154 million provisional votes. Two-thirds of these were thrown out. And this was also from from Democratic areas. And this information I'm getting from the Cleveland Free Press, who did a lot of reporting on it, but it's kind of an underground paper. Let me just put it this way, that I've got pages and pages and pages of information about what went on in terms of vote repression in Ohio, and that during the election recount, the things that occurred, there are basically about 3/4 of the 88 counties broke Ohio election laws in the recount. The recount teams were often met with hostility, even at the point of emotional abuse. Teams were often not allowed close enough to tables, counting tables, to view the ballots and the count, despite the fact that coordinators were actually pointing out Ohio law, the violations of Ohio law, during the recount. And, in writing, on paper. And so what did the director of the Board of Elections, a Democrat, say? Well, I'm sorry, but this is the way we do it here. Yeah. Don't like it, sue us. So. 3% of the vote was hand counted, and that's by Ohio law. It's supposed to be done by random selection. That this was generally not done. These were precincts that were hand picked. In Cuyahoga County, we found out after the election that prior to the recount, and this is against the law, it's election fraud, that precincts were counted, hand counted, and then counted by machine until they found precincts where the hand count and the machine count tallied. Then those were separated out to be counted during the time of the recount.
Richard, let's let Joanne deal with the recount, okay?
Oh, she's doing that?
Yeah.
Okay, didn't know that. Okay, well, I guess Joanne's going to be talking about that, about the recount. So I'll just say that when you crunch the numbers and you find out what was really going on, that Kerry took Ohio. And it's very clear by majority. Not even it wasn't even close. He took Ohio, and we were robbed. Thank you very much.
Dr. Richard Hayes Phillips is a person who offered sworn affidavit testimony in support of temporary relief we sought in the Ohio litigation, and also offered himself as a deponent witness subject to a testimony under oath and subject to cross-examination. He's looked at the statistics to determine anomalies from that examination throughout the state of Ohio. Dr. Phillips.
Thank you. Some of the numbers I am about to give you differ from our previous speaker. I assure you these are correct. I will summarize the testimony that I gave to the Ohio Supreme Court under oath under penalty of perjury. I submitted 21 scholarly statistical reports. There are still more than 92,000 uncounted regular ballots in Ohio, most of them punch cards. I have examined 7 of the 8 counties with the highest number. In every case, these uncounted votes are highly concentrated in precincts that voted overwhelmingly for John Kerry, by margins of 12-1 in Cleveland, 7-1 in Dayton, 5-1 in Cincinnati, 4.5-1 in Akron. It is estimated that another 35,000 provisional ballots also remain uncounted, including close to 7,500 in Cuyahoga County alone, where Cleveland is located. 77% of provisional ballots were counted, according to the Washington Post, and I have seen no statements indicating that a lesser number than that were counted. In fact, in Lucas County, the lowest percentage of provisional ballots were counted, and it was something around 2/3. But we don't always have a breakdown of why ballots weren't counted. I do know that the 2 most common reasons for the rejection of provisional ballots were because voters were not on the rolls, and of course, many of them were removed from the voter rolls against their will. And the other reason is that they voted in the wrong precinct, which, as our previous speaker correctly stated, often meant they voted in the right building, but at the wrong table. There are many polling stations in Ohio where multiple precincts vote in the same building. And in Ohio, by law, the order in which the candidates' names appear on the ballot must rotate from precinct to precinct. This is all in the name of fairness. It is actually believed that voters are so lazy or so stupid that they vote for the first name listed. But it is an open invitation to fraud. In Cuyahoga County, in Cleveland specifically, I investigated 70 polling stations. I knew exactly which precincts voted at each polling place. I knew exactly what order the candidates' names appeared on the ballot in each of those precincts. And no mass conspiracy involving a lot of dark, sinister poll worker was needed here. All that was needed was not to train the poll workers properly. Most of them did not know that it mattered, that it was important to be sure that a voter with a punch card for one precinct did not vote at a voting machine intended for a different precinct, which would shift that voter's choices 1 or 2 columns to the right or to the left. No, either direction. If A votes at B, B votes at A, it can go either direction. Either direction. If Kerry votes, go to Bush. Bush votes, go Libertarian. And if Kerry is getting 90, 95, 98% of the vote in those precincts, that is not much of a loss for Bush. Only a few votes might turn up Libertarian, and no one is any the wiser unless they actually know which precincts voted in the same polling station. Or conversely, if Bush votes go to Kerry, which again is no big loss if Bush is only taking 2% or 5% in the precinct, the Kerry votes shift to candidate disqualified, who used to be Ralph Nader. And the tabulators were calibrated to count that column as 0. No matter how many votes turned up in that column, Kerry votes would simply disappear into the void. We also have sworn affidavits from Cleveland, from voters who were given punch cards already punched for Bush. If they voted for Bush, they would be casting a valid vote. If they voted for Kerry, they would be casting an overvote and would spoil their ballots. And I doubt that very many voters, when taking their punch cards out of the envelopes, held them up to the light to see if they were already punched. In Columbus, discriminatory allocation of voting machines led directly to higher turnout in Bush precincts than in Kerry precincts. A 10% differential, 60% turnout in Bush precincts, 50% turnout in Kerry precincts. 122 voting machines were not delivered in Franklin County. We actually possess from the Board of Elections a redacted list, a list of all the voting machines that were scheduled to be delivered, complete with serial numbers, with 54 of them blacked out. And this is over and above the 68 voting machines that they had previously decided not to deliver and leave in a warehouse. In Toledo, systematic voter suppression activities led directly to lower vote counts in Democratic precincts. Tactics included removal of longtime residents from the voter rolls, broken voting machines, actually running out of ballots and sending people home, and sending voters to the wrong lines, and therefore the wrong precinct, or to the wrong polling locations altogether. In three southwestern Ohio counties, Warren, Butler, and Claremont, which provided to Bush his entire margin of victory in Ohio, Bush had a bigger margin in these three counties alone than he had statewide. John Kerry somehow received fewer votes than Ellen Connolly, an underfunded African-American municipal judge from Cleveland. The Supreme Court Chief Justice race, in which she was running against a well-financed incumbent, drew 1.2 million fewer votes statewide than the presidential race. You would not expect a little-known down-ticket candidate to get more votes than Kerry. In fact, there were no third-party candidates for Chief Justice. There were no write-ins. There were only three choices: Moyer, Connolly, or nobody. If, for the purpose of analysis, and you go through precinct by precinct, which is what you have to do to discover the extent of these anomalies, if you assume that all of Chief Justice Moyer's votes went to Bush, and that all of the people who didn't even vote for Chief Justice voted for Bush, that is still not enough votes to account for the number of votes awarded to George Bush. There would have to be 13,500 people at a minimum in those three counties who voted for both George Bush and Ellen Connolly. And for every person who didn't vote for Chief Justice who voted for Kerry, and surely there were some, there would have to be yet another warm body who voted for both Bush and Connolly. We're not merely comparing numbers here. These are the same persons, the same souls, in the same precincts, on the same day, who, according to the official results, voted for Bush and Connolly. We think it is more likely that votes were shifted from Kerry to Bush. In Miami County, we know the vote totals are incorrect. A reported voter turnout of 98.55% in one precinct has been disproven. Supposedly, all but 10 registered voters showed up at the polls that day. When I told this to Bob Fetrakis, his immediate response was to organize a canvass of that precinct, and they located in a matter of hours 25 registered voters who say they did not vote. Miami County raised suspicions on election night. after 100% of the precincts had reported, another 19,000 votes were found. And this increased Bush's margin of victory in Miami County by another 6,000 votes, to a margin of 16,000 exactly. And the percentages for the candidates changed not at all, to the hundredths of a percent, almost as if the machines were programmed to come out that way. In Mahoning County, where Youngstown is located, and this is verified by the Board of Elections themselves, 20 to 30 touchscreen voting machines recorded votes for candidates opposed to those selected by the voters. Always jumping from Democrat to Republican. In one Youngstown precinct, some voters reported that their votes had hopped from Kerry to Bush, and that they had to scroll through two times or even five times to get it to come out right. Others said that the presidential option never appeared on the screen. And they walked away forlorn, having voted for all the other offices and not having had a chance to vote for president. And they filed complaints. Well, it turns out that no undervotes were reported in that precinct. Somehow, everyone who cast a ballot had a vote counted for president, even though some people never had a choice appear on the screen. I can think of no other way this could have happened except this, that these touchscreen machines were programmed to default to candidate Bush. And if you did not override the default choice of that computer, you would be voting for Bush. And if the same thing happened for down-ticket races where many people choose not to vote for the office, those votes would go for the Republican candidate. That's one of the counties where Moyer got more votes than Bush. I think we can guess how. Bernie has provided me with 73 similar complaints in Broward, Miami-Dade, and Palm Beach counties in Florida. This was a nationwide phenomenon of votes hopping from Democrat to Republican. Almost all the irregularities and suppression are in one direction: hurting John Kerry, helping George Bush. This is no accident. This is election fraud. And you know, who am I? I'm just a small town St. Lawrence County boy living 20 miles from the Canadian border. I rarely go to Ohio. I received an email from a forlorn activist in Pennsylvania asking me if I would look at these numbers, please. She sent me numbers from Cleveland. And I saw immediately that votes had been shifted from Kerry to other candidates. So I wrote up a report as best I could, and the first person I sent it to was Stephanie Chubbs Jones. I didn't know anything about her except it was her district and she had a right to know. And somehow I got swept up in this case and ended up in a hotel room helping Jesse Jackson write speeches, ended up testifying for 4 hours before the Ohio Supreme Court under oath. Thank you. Honest to God, I thought nobody was going to read my stuff. But I put it on my website anyway, and through the miracle of search engines, people found it. I only used 4 analytical techniques: addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. Is there anyone out here who knows how to do these things, who would like to help take this burden off my shoulders? I will be happy to consult with any of you. I have flat rate, long distance. I'll call you back. But this is your country too. It's not just mine. We need to take it back together. Or otherwise, what do we say to our ancestors who gave their lives for this right to vote? We're sorry. We didn't pass on to our descendants the precious legacy that you bequeathed unto us. Remember the words of Benjamin Franklin when he left Constitution the Constitutional Convention at Independence Hall, and he was asked, "What sort of government have you given us?" And he said, "A republic, if you can keep it." We have not kept it, we have not kept the flame, and we need to take this country back. It does not belong to Bush, it belongs to us.
Thank you.